Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, so you showed up on November 3rd. You cast your vote. You prayed before, during, and after. By the way, did you cast more than one? I cast hundreds and hundreds of votes every 2 years because after about 16 years of being an activist here in Raleigh, North Carolina, and involved in other things all over the place, I earned the right that people would trust me with my voter pick. So every 2 years, I put my list out that have seen the most activity on my personal list. It's on Facebook. It's downloadable. We put it on the website all over the place, and literally hundreds of people take that bad boy and go to the ballot box, and they vote, and they take my recommendations seriously, and that's awesome. So that's my ode to my Chicago background. But for a lot of us, given the situation we're in right now, you vote, you feel good about your vote. Most of you listening to the show wanted Donald Trump to have a second term based on his promises made and promises kept and the obvious performance of his administration. And obviously that's all up in the air. And so a lot of Christians are like, well, you know what? God is on the throne, as God is in control. So that's it. My hands are up and I'm out of it. Well, if you study the Bible, especially in the New Testament, did the apostles take that approach? Well, we're just going to hang out here in the upper room and we're going to pray the gospel into the rest of the world. No, God actually had to throw them out via persecution. And so what is your role in all of this? We have a role. This is not over yet. And by the way, there's two issues here, which we've been talking about on the air and I've been talking about in personal conversations. There's two issues. There's the Biden-Trump issue, and then there's the electoral process at large issue, which could lead to the absolute destruction of this country, which I know sounds like hyperbole, but it isn't. And somebody that wrote an article just recently, just came out on November 7th the other day on the stream, Christians must demand justice in election crisis. One of the Christian men in this country I admire the most, who's done just incredible work for the kingdom, especially working with young people, which is near and dear to my heart, is Dr. Jeff Myers, the president of Summit Ministries. Jeff Myers, it's been far too long, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
Fired up, but that's not abnormal.
I wouldn't expect anything less.
Yes, thank you very much. Blame the hair, I guess. Anyway, it's great to hear from you. I definitely, in the second segment before we have to let you go, Jeff, I definitely want to talk about Summit Ministries in general because I want everybody to understand just what God has been doing there and what a great opportunity it is for our young people. So if you guys out there have children or grandchildren between the ages of 16 and 25, make sure you do not leave before the end of the second segment because you will hear from Jeff exactly what God is doing at Summit. It's just remarkable. So what led to you writing this article, Jeff? It's great to see it moving around. It's a great article, very powerful message, but what kind of teed it up for you?
Well, I just started seeing people on social media who are believers saying, I cast my vote, that's all I can do, God is in control. And I thought to myself, that's bad citizenship, and that's even worse theology. So I thought I'd write an article about it. Some people love it, some people hate it, but it's bad citizenship because in a republic, we should all recognize that your vote doesn't get you across the finish line, it gets you to the starting line. We are not citizens just one day in November, first Tuesday of November every other year. We're citizens 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And the second thing, Steve, was I thought that's bad theology the way people are using it, because God does not describe himself in the Bible as controlling. You won't find that term in reference to God. God is sovereign in Scripture. And being sovereign, he's made us in his image and given us the ability to see what he sees, hear what he pays attention to, and to be his hands and feet. So to say we did our little thing, we did our vote, we're just going to walk away and whatever happens, happens, just isn't responsible.
Yeah, it's not responsible at all. It's a misunderstanding of citizenship. And like you said so well, Jeff, I mean, it's like, hey, I'm a citizen once every 4 years for on a Tuesday afternoon in November. No, that's the way you can sell your entire country down the river. And you're going to talk about this as we discuss the bad theology here in terms of neighbor love. But citizenship is a constant thing, and our founding fathers understood that if we were not vigilant, this thing would go south and go south quickly, which I fear is happening. I just don't know why people would be so apathetic about it. I know they're frustrated. I know they think the fix is in, and in some ways, I'm sure it is. But unfortunately, Jeff, I mean, and we've seen this even with the COVID response this year. It seems like a lot of Christians are just kind of willing to lay down and roll over and play dead.
I find that particularly sad to think about because it's so self-centered. It is so narcissistic. Mm. I have even heard Christians say, oh, well, if the persecution comes, then, you know, that's okay because, you know, we're going to be persecuted for our faith. And I just think it is not about you. Quit whining.
Yeah,
and by the way,
yeah.
Most people I don't think really would like the persecution if it came. They're just, it's just some false bravado. But here's the way to look at it biblically. Next to loving God, the most important thing is to love our neighbor. And loving our neighbor, Steve, as you know, is not just waving hello to them or taking them a pie at Thanksgiving time. All through Scripture, Jesus talked about loving your neighbor, but it's an Old Testament concept all through the pages of Scripture, and every single time it has to do with one thing, seeking justice.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we're after here. That's why I mentioned in the introduction, Jeff, that we're not just talking about Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. We're talking about the integrity of the electoral process in America, which has a huge impact on all of our neighbors. I make this case, and a lot of Christians don't like it when I say this. And a guy sent me a message the other day and said, I think you should get on the air and apologize for saying it's a sin to not vote. And I said, I think it's a sin to not vote because it's a violation of neighbor love when our federal government and state government and local government is affecting literally all 340 million of our neighbors. And you say, I don't really care about that. I think that's an absolute violation of neighbor love. But the justice issue, unpack that a little bit. We're going to hit the break in a little over a minute, Jeff, and we'll continue the conversation. But unpack that because we have a central role as God uses us on this earth to defend justice and to pursue it. So talk a little bit about that because I want to make sure everybody understands that.
It's one of the most fundamental aspects of the biblical worldview, Steve, that we are the ones who can see truth. We actually believe that it exists. Other worldviews don't even believe there is such a thing as truth. Truth is just speaking your truth as a way to try to get power. We say there is such a thing as truth. It proceeds from the nature and character of God. And it's our obligation then to outline what that is and to oppose lies when we hear them. We should never willingly agree to something that we know is untrue.
Yeah, and something like this, when a process that should be relatively simple, especially in the 21st century, accurately counting votes and avoiding misrepresentation and flat-out fraud, which should be easy for us to do, but apparently it isn't. And who's going to stand up and scream for justice? That's our job as followers of Christ. Jeff, I'm going to put you on hold. We're talking to Jeff Myers from Summit Ministries. We'll be right back. 'Cause you are more. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, thestevenobleshow.com, wherever you get your podcasts are available there. You can join us right here in the studio via Facebook Live Monday through Friday, the Steve Noble Show page on Facebook. Reading through and discussing Christians Must Demand Justice in Election Crisis by Dr. Jeff Myers, who's the president of Summit Ministries, and I want you guys to learn more about Summit here in a minute. I'd love this part of the article. I share this on Facebook Live and on my Facebook, my personal page. So go check it and share it yourself because it's very thought-provoking and very challenging. And every Christian that takes their desire, we all say, oh, I care about the country. I'm a patriot. I love this country. I really care. And you vote on November 3rd and then you think you're done. You're not. That's part of the problem is we're not actively engaged. And you need to be engaged. This is from the article. During this critical time in our nation, it should be churches and people of faith who stand firm, not for our preferred candidate, but for justice and the rule of law to be upheld in our communities and in our electoral process. Amen and amen. Of course, I would want Donald Trump to get a second term. That's what I want. That's what I'm praying for. But even bigger are the issues of justice and the rule of law and truth. Those are bigger issues than the president of the United States, as big of a deal as it is. And this article, and Dr. Jeff Myers just does a great job of pointing that out. Again, Jeff, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, Steve, I'm glad to be with you.
And so kind of talking about our role in all of this, because I think right now people, it's so easy to kind of sit back. We watch it play out on social media, mainstream media. We see it in the news, and then we just kind of sit back and we're like, okay, well, I'm just going to pray about it. And God's in control, which we were talking about. I was just kind of going off about that on Facebook Live during the commercial break. But how do we kind of, what are we supposed to do here, Jeff? I mean, a lot of people feel helpless. It's this big machine out there, and like we're just little plebeians and have no role to play here. So help us to understand what we could be, what we should be doing.
Well, let me just give a few bullet points. First, I think we do need to pray and fast for our country, for our neighbors, for justice to be done, for righteousness to be upheld in the land, for truth to go forward, and for lies to be exposed. That should be a regular part of our prayer and devotional life. But second thing, Steve, I think it's important for people to understand the whole process of, you know, what is this whole thing about election fraud? Right now we have hundreds, maybe of millions of people, at least tens of millions of people, who in America doubt that there are free and fair elections.
Yeah.
And it's a problem for the political life in the same way that false currency, counterfeits, are for the economic life. If people don't trust the currency, then they won't use it. And I'm afraid that's what's going to happen. So I think we need to familiarize ourselves with websites. Heritage.org, for example, has something on election fraud, the history of election fraud, what the issues are, and what states that have really gotten around this, gotten their heads around it ethically and developed good laws have done. We ought to be passing this. Third, make sure your elected officials know who you are. If you think that they would mock you because you're a Christian, that's okay. Just say, hey, I'm one of those born again. You probably think I'm crazy, but I am here. I love you. I pray for you every day as my leader. I want to know how I can support you, and I'm going to be praying that you will speak the truth and you will stand against lies. Make sure that they know you are there. If Christians did those things alone, it would be huge. But there is more we can do. If we encourage our pastors to say, you know what, Pastor, I need to know a biblical perspective on this that will make sense to the people I work with when we're standing around the water cooler chatting about politics or economics or culture or whatever it happens to be. Steve, 90% of pastors say they believe that the Bible speaks to today's issues, but only 10% of them ever say anything about it from the pulpit. There's a big opportunity there. Where people really want this, pastors have the ability to preach it. The resources are there. I just think it's time to pull it all together.
Yeah, and that's such a great point that you made in terms of what happens if we lose our trust in the election process. What you said is exactly what's going to happen. People are just going to be even more apathetic than they already are. And they go, forget it. It doesn't matter. It's rigged anyway. And then they go about their business. And while we go about our business and take care of me, myself, and I, the forces of darkness and evil intended men and women just continue to grow in power and strength. And the next thing you know, you don't recognize your country. And that falls back onto the people that know and have the ability to understand and talk about the truth. That always falls back on us. The church is the conscience of the nation. And it's not. And again, I wish pastors would stand up and be bold. Thank God my family and I go to a church where the pastor is not afraid of his congregation and he doesn't fear man. He fears God. But that's not common. But for us as individuals, again, going back to your point in this article, Christians Must Demand Justice in Election Crisis, you can find it at thestream.org, making the point of, hey, just saying God is in control to take yourself off the hook and your hands don't have to get dirty and your feet don't have to get wet. That's just not an option for us as Christians, but it's such a powerful thing because, golly, Jeff, I mean, can we even imagine what it would look like in this country? And you got to be intellectually honest. I'm concerned about the election process, not primarily because of Donald Trump, but because of the condition of the nation and the call to justice. And for us as Christians, I mean, hey, unequal weights and measures is a sin. I can go Old Testament, I can go New Testament, wherever you want to play. But it's obvious that we need to stand up for this. Are you hopeful about this, Jeff, or do you think this is just the continued downward slide of America?
Steve, I'm hopeful because I have the opportunity to work with a lot of young leaders, training them to understand and develop a biblical worldview. And we find that when young people develop a biblical worldview, 83% become supportive of capitalism, 91% support conservative social policies, 83% oppose abortion, 83% want government to be small and limited in scope. In other words, they're growing up to be hardworking, thoughtful, neighbor-focused, compassionate leaders. And I have the privilege through summit.org to work with about 40,000 young people like this every year. I think they are our hope. I am a little discouraged at how much money Christians put into the election process to try to sway a one-time undecided voter, about $600 per vote sought. Because for that amount of money, we can train a young person to stand strong in a biblical worldview for the rest of their lives.
And that's really the thing that we need to remember. We've lost that understanding, as our founding fathers had, about our posterity, the people coming behind us. We're always running down to the bottom of the hill to clean up the train wreck. But if you're at the top of the hill, like you guys are at Summit, summit.org, equipping and supporting rising generations to embrace God's truth and champion a biblical worldview. And if they learn that, guess what? That's going to go out into the public square. They're going to be able to discuss it, and they're going to be able to lead that way. Tell us real quick, Jeff, about the summer programs, because these are two-week intensive conferences, students age 16 to 25 in Colorado and Georgia. I want people to understand that.
That's right. We have two options. One is the two-week intensive program where young adults come together with well-regarded Christian thought leaders. These are best-selling authors, doctorates in different areas, believers who are strong economists, philosophers, theologians, and so forth, to come together with for lectures and dialogue and one-on-one discussion and Q&A sessions to with young adults to help answer their questions about their faith and strengthen their biblical worldview. And it's got to be dialogue-based, by the way, because if you say to somebody, this is the way it is, and believe me because I'm telling you, then you'll find people really resisting, right?
Right, right.
The Associated Press does not have the right in the Constitution to declare when the election is over. And
right.
And the more people say, if you're doubting that this process is fair, then you're dumb or you're misled by Donald Trump or whatever. Anybody who made it past the third day of Psychology 101 knows that's a terrible way to try to persuade people of anything. We've got to have the dialogue with this rising generation.
Exactly right. Summit.org is the website, summit.org for students 16 to 25, these two-week intensive student conferences. Dr. Jeff Myers, my good friend, thanks, buddy, for being on. It's a blessing to hear from you.
Absolutely. Great to be with you.
Okay, pal. Talk.
So what are we waiting for?
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. Following up, I want to spend the rest of the show today following up on what Dr. Jeff Myers was talking about. And there, especially at the end, when he was talking about what happens at Summit Ministries, okay? And if you're kind of, this is like the kind of the homeschooling world, hardcore conservative Christians, a lot of them know about Summit. Summit's been around for a long time. Dr. David Noble started it. He did this huge book about competing worldviews. Brilliant guy. Different Noble, not related. And they just do these incredible summer intensive. They're 2 weeks long. They have some of the brightest Christian thinkers out there. And they're dealing with apologetics, culture, economics, new age, and new spirituality, pro-life, abortion, homosexuality, religious liberty, Islam, same-sex marriage, politics and government, origins, sexuality and gender, secular humanism, all of it. Okay? And they're out there for an intense two-week session. And they do it in Colorado. They have this beautiful facility out in Colorado. And then they used to do them in Tennessee. Now they're doing them in Georgia. You have to spend the money to go there, but that was his point. He said, we're spending about $600 for every person we're trying to convert in a political race, but we're dealing with what's happening down in the Gulf of Mexico at the bottom of the Mississippi River where all the sludge and all the other garbage is. Instead of going upstream, up to the headwaters of the Mississippi, where it's all the way up into Minnesota and Canada, and what you put in there will follow all the way down. So if you want to infect the Mississippi River, start at the headwaters. And when I say infect, that could be negative or positive, okay? And so that's what Summit's all about. And that's what he was talking about. You have to train. And when they do, when young people are trained in a solid biblical worldview, in facts and figures in history, not emotions, not memes, not social media, but actual hard numbers, philosophy, biblical worldview and history. Then you heard, did you hear the numbers? Like 88%, 90%, 92% end up taking on their own a biblically conservative, both theologically and politically, position. Free market over socialism. All the things that we say we want, that we are desperate to have our kids embrace, they get there. But only after that kind of an investment. And it costs, I don't know how much it costs to do the summit thing. I'll see if I can look it up right quick. But you go, is that worth it? We're paying big prices on down the road, not the least of which is in blood with babies, because we haven't raised the next generation, our posterity. We haven't done that well. We just haven't. So I'm just trying to look it up just so you know, and then I'm going to move on and talk about this Tower of Babel thing. I'm looking at it. They got the two-week thing at a brochure. I'm trying to see what the price is. I know it's not cheap, but it's not like it's $3,000 or something. I'll try to figure it out. But what an investment. Okay, so what we have now, and this is what I wanted to slip into for the rest of the show, which is something I think the Lord just dumped into me last week, as for some reason I started to look at the big problem in America. We have this deep and widening divide. Do we not? Of course we do. We have a deep and widening divide. Both sides can't even talk to each other because, and this is where God just kind of got a hold of my mind, we don't have a common language. And there are two things that we used to, two types of language that we used to have in common. And I think it really all started to break down coming out of the baby boomers going into the 60s, and we started to lose all this. So there's two common languages in the history of the United States, and I'm not talking about English, okay? I'm talking about the common language of generally having a Judeo-Christian ethic. That's common language. That was a common language. Most people believe in God. Even today, believe it or not, about 70% of Americans will self-identify as Christian. Most on the right, and a decent chunk that would surprise you on the left, are going to identify as a Christian. For a lot of them, it's just the default position, right? I believe in God. Jesus is just all right with me. I know there's some good stuff in the Bible. I try to go to church at Christmas and Easter. I'm definitely not a Muslim. I'm not a Buddhist. I'm not an atheist. I'm not Eastern religions, Eastern Orthodox religions. I'm not any of that stuff. I'm not a Mormon. So yeah, I'm a Christian. Jesus is just all right with me, like that old song, right? So it's a default position in America. But you go back 50, 60, 70, 100 years, and a belief in God, a belief in Jesus as the Son of God who came to save the world from its sin, a belief in the wisdom and validity of Scripture. Back in the days when we used to post the Ten Commandments because we understood that the Ten Commandments in and of themselves are a great basis for a great society. There was that general understanding that a Judeo-Christian ethic worked. It made sense. It was good for America. America was built out of that ground. Okay, that's the soil out of which we came, a Judeo-Christian ethic. So we had that as a common language. I think that started to go away in the 1950s, largely. Okay, we've always had to fight for it, but largely as a society. Take prayer out of schools, take the Ten Commandments out, that kind of stuff. Okay, that's on one hand. The other language, and then I'm going to read from Genesis 11. The other language that we had in common for a long time was just general civic language. Freedom, liberty, rights and responsibilities of citizenship, the responsibility of voting, of being a good citizen, a general understanding of the Constitution, or at least the principles. So we talk about liberty and freedom, and in order to form a more perfect union, nobody claiming that America's ever been perfect. Has it been great? Great's a relative term. Great to, relative to other countries? Yes. Great in times relative to God's standards? Yeah, at times. But we got a lot of garbage on our ledger too. Don't be fooled by that. Listen, it took a long time before a woman could vote. Took a long time to get rid of slavery and a lot of blood. Took a long time to get some equal rights for African Americans and people of color. We put Japanese people in intern camps. Okay, we've done a lot of garbage, not to mention 61 million dead babies on our watch under the stars and stripes, okay? So just like a human being, just like you, and just like me, America has a spotted record. I got it. So civic language in general and a Judeo-Christian ethic in general, those were our common languages. Those are gone. And it's gone because of what Jeff Myers is talking about. We haven't taught it. We haven't taught history. Schools got rid of that. Schools chose secular humanism. The Frankfurt School, secular humanism, get God out of the way because with God comes judgment. Nobody wants to be judged, and I want to do whatever the heck I want to do. We've been thirsting for autonomy since the garden and the tree, okay? I'll do what I want to, thank you. I'm not going to answer to some God. So you got to get rid of them. It's like being a kid putting your fingers in your ears going, la, 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 I don't want to hear it. What fellowship does darkness have with light? People don't want to hear the gospel because their deeds are dark and they don't want to be exposed and they don't want to be judged. Okay? Bada bing, bada boom. And so America has lost that common language. So let's look at the Tower of Babel. Okay? Genesis 11, verses 1 through 9. Now the whole earth had one language and the same words. And as people migrated from the east, this is not that long after Noah survived the flood. They found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. Okay, so it's not that long after. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the earth, over the face of the whole earth. Okay, so we're pretty into themselves. Look at what we're capable of. Whoa, let's build a giant city. Let's make it nice and tall, like all the way up to the heavens, right? You got to get over yourself. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of man had built. Verse 6. And the Lord said, listen, this is fascinating. Behold, they are one people, and they have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. And nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and there and confuse their language so they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of the earth, and they left off building the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. So it's fascinating to me. Behold, they are one people, and they have one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. And nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that true? And you know why that's true? Because we're created in God's image, the Imago Dei. So our capabilities, our potential is amazing. It's amazing. But we take all that, and just like the idiot in Isaiah, we go cut down a tree, we cut it in half. With half, we make a fire and bake our bread. And the other half, we fashioned it into an idol and bow down and worship it. Because I think it was maybe C.S. Lewis who said, the human heart is an idol factory. And so that's what's happening there. They're taking this unbelievable potential and they're building a monument to themselves. And God's like, yeah, this is only going to get worse and worse. They're so bent. And I said I wouldn't flood the earth again. So let's do this. I'm going to confuse all their languages. And then they're not going to be able to cooperate. They aren't going to be able to work together. And they're all going to have to split up. And so what'd you get out of that? Chaos. And what does America look like today? Chaos. Chaos in the streets, chaos in the electoral process, chaos in politics, chaos in the church. Open your church. Don't open your church. Wear a mask. Don't wear a mask. You care about your neighbor. You hate your neighbor. Where's that common language? It's gone. The common language of a Judeo-Christian ethic in this country is gone. Half the country kind of speaks it. Half the country rejects it. Then you got a civic language. Half the country, New York Times 1619 Project, this whole country was built on slavery. Slavery and that evil permeates every single cell of the nation. So the only thing that solves that is destroy the nation. And the other half saying, hold on a minute. And that's where we're at. We'll pick it up there when we come back. America falling in line with the Tower of Babel. That's what I was trying to unpack here today. I'm going to keep talking about that. We were talking to Dr. Jeff Myers earlier. Christians must demand justice in election crisis. And he said something towards the end because he's the president of Summit Ministries, summit.org, by the way. And they've just done 25, 30 years now. Just do these incredible student conferences, two-week conferences in the summer, 16 to 25 years of age, where they work through all the big issues, whether it's economics, worldview, philosophy, sexual issues, gender issues, different world religions, all of that. And it takes time and intense dialogue to get anywhere, to find out what do you believe and why do you believe it? Because so many people today take positions that are about a mile wide and an inch deep. And you can deal with them, but not via a tweet and not via a Facebook post, and not via an engaging Instagram picture. It takes time. And that's why we don't have a big impact on people struggling with poverty, because we don't want to take the time to invest in them. And largely, we haven't taken the time to invest in our own children. God bless the homeschool community. And we tried. But even then, we didn't do enough. And all four of my kids have been through my two classes, my Constitution and Civics class, in my ethics class. And my two old, our two oldest at 25 and 22, they're not in lockstep with us. Now, that's a work in progress for them, and that's between them and the Lord in many ways. But, man, I would think, well, gosh, Steve Noble's kids, especially his older ones, they must be hardcore conservatives. Two younger ones are. The two older ones aren't. And that's complicated, and that's a complicated journey. By the way, I unpacked that with our oldest, Hayden, on one of the SOB podcasts, which I'm going to get back to that, by the way. It's just been a crazy season. But I'm going to, who is this SOB? We did an hour and a half conversation. So go check that, whoisthissob.com or whoisthissob, wherever you get your podcasts. And go look at the one, it's called Son of an SOB. He grows up in our house. He goes off to college, not a particularly crazy liberal kind of political type school. Meets other people, starts having conversations, changes his mind on a few things. He's a rock solid Christian, pro-life, pro-sexual ethic. But policy-wise on some issues, he's left of center. And talk about difficult. And for a couple of years, man, it was bad. He's 25 now. And we just had to avoid it. And thank God, I think, that he was living in Orlando for 3 years because it kept it to a minimum. But we're in a good place now. And and I know a lot of you can relate to that, be it your spouse or your kid or your grandkids, whatever. But I would urge you, go listen to that podcast because you're going to learn something from that. But it takes time and conversation, which is what Jeff Myers was talking about, which is so important. So coming back to this whole Tower of Babel thing, in America, that's why when I you can sit there and argue with somebody that's pro-choice, pro-Biden, pro-socialism, pro-free college for everybody, pro-AOC, New Green Deal, all this kind of stuff. And you're just going to bang your head against the wall. Because just like at the Tower of Babel, we have multiple languages going on. You got the language of the left, you got the language of the right. You got the language of the believer, and you got the language of the unbeliever. And they're just banging heads because we lost a common tongue. We don't speak the same Judeo-Christian ethic anymore, and we don't speak the same civics anymore. And you've got a whole generation who say, what do you think about America? Oh, it's rotten to the core. Why? Because the whole country was based on, built out of slavery. Slavery permeates every institution, institutional racism from the top to the bottom. It's all over the place. And the only way you solve that, the only way you get rid of that kind of cancer is you got to eradicate all of it. Meaning America 2.0. The Constitution's old. The founding fathers were bigots and racists. They're all a bunch of evil scumbags, bunch of rich white patriarchs beating the world down with their overzealous patriarchal Christianity. And then boom, you get Donald Trump to top the cake, right? Boom. That's how they see it. You need to unpack that by sending them an article or a tweet or blasting off on Facebook. It takes time, time and education. And that's what Jeff Myers was talking about. So what does that look like? All right, I shared this story once before. Our oldest child, Hayden, not a child, he's 25, but one of his best friends. So he was stuck here in town before he moved to San Francisco because he broke his ankle the night before we were supposed to take a 5-day cross-country trip, which would have been awesome, and hopefully we'll be able to do it after Christmas together. But we get into a conversation about capitalism or free market capitalism versus the notion of socialism. And at first, you know, hey, show me one time in history where socialism has worked. You try all the usual stuff that we throw out there. And then I'm like, okay, hold on a second. All right, so what are you actually trying to accomplish? When you're embracing capitalism as evil, socialism could work. Like what's your end game here? What's your goal? Now I'm just giving you an example of a conversation which I thought was very fruitful. And it's not like at the end of it he goes, well, I'm a free market capitalist now. That's not what happened. But there were definitely seeds planted, okay? And so this is really fascinating. So please listen. I was like, okay, what's your goal here? What are you trying to accomplish? Let's just use the United States of America. We're going to continue down the road of free market capitalism. We're going to switch tracks and move over to more of a socialistic model. But what's your goal? What's your end game? What are you trying to accomplish? And essentially he said, you know, I want to see us in a system where people have a chance to be successful, and that people aren't falling through the cracks, so we don't have this massive income distribution, and we have a ton of poor people, lower middle class people over here that just can't seem to get anywhere, and then we have a small group over here that are just killing it. And I could hear in his voice, there was a beautiful altruism there, that he's trying to care for people. That was what was underneath it, okay? I want to see everybody taken care of, right? And as a Christian, I'm like, me too. All right, cool. We could agree on something. I said, all right, now, does that mean you want everybody to have the exact same results? And this is where it's interesting. This is a big, I think Pew did this study last year, a bunch of millennials and Gen Z, so pretty much 35 down to 15. And 61% of them had a positive reaction to the word socialism, and 59% of them had a positive reaction to the word capitalism. Did you hear that? So you're like, wait a second. Aren't those kind of contradictory? Yes, they are. But because they don't really understand, they're perfectly comfortable with that cognitive dissonance because they don't understand. So I said, okay. So he actually doesn't, because he wants people to be able to succeed and to thrive if they're able and have an opportunity to. So he didn't want to cap everybody or have equal outcomes. He just wanted to make sure nobody was falling through the cracks. I said, okay, I think that's admirable. So, of course, there's some people that are going to be lazy, so you got to figure out a way to deal with that. Other people that are just incapable or catch a bad break or need some help. Okay, but in a country with 340 million people, do you think that would have a low price tag, a medium high price tag, or a pretty high price tag? Like, is it going to take a lot of money to make sure everybody's had a decent chance of doing okay? Livable minimum wage, that kind of stuff? He goes, yeah, be pretty expensive. Okay, so I understand your goal. So the question is, what vehicle is going to get us to a situation where we have enough resources where we can help everybody? So like, what engine is going to do that? What engine is going to provide that kind of resource? Does that make sense? And he's like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm with you. I understand. I said, all right, so which engine is it? Which economic system has created wealth to that extent? And at the same time, has lifted more people out of poverty than any other economic system in the history of the world. It's free market capitalism. And then a really interesting thing, I said, do you think God wants to see his special creation, mankind? Do you think he wants to see us maximize our potential? And then he kind of shuddered. And he goes, yeah, I don't really like that word maximize. Because to a young person, when you say maximize, that's like elitism. That means some people are going to maximize, they're going to have a ton, and other people are going to get left behind. Well, isn't that interesting? And I was like, oh, okay, all right. And I'm kind of learning the whole time. Okay, I can give him credit for his altruism. I said, okay, I understand where you're coming from, but still, do you believe that God wants to see his special creation, mankind, thrive? To be able to provide for themselves, provide for their families? Because God did say, if you can't provide for your family, you're worse than an unbeliever. And he wants you to be generous. Generous towards the kingdom, generous towards your neighbor, generous towards the poor. And so you got to have resources in order to do all that stuff. So which engine has proven, you got to look at history, which engine has proven that it can create that kind of wealth? And the problem in America and any other free market capitalist society is the fewer people that subscribe to a Christian ethic, the more their capitalism is just going to be, it's going to be greed and selfishness. But if the gospel is growing, And we're being good ambassadors in a free market system, as Christians, we're showing people you can be successful in a capitalistic program and be very generous and help other people. That begins to sound, does that sound pretty good? But you got to deal with sin. And you know what happens if you concentrate power? We've seen that too. And we're making progress one inch at a time. Wasn't a home run, over about an hour. And at the end, he's like, yeah, I'm not a free market capitalist. I still think socialism is the way. And we take positions like that, and I don't give in easily either. I'm going to plant my fat flag in the ground. And, hey, you make a good argument, but I'm not changing my mind. Okay, I know what I'm dealing with there. Whether it's me, you, or anybody else, an 18-year-old, a 25-year-old, or a 55-year-old, we all have pride. The seed of every sin exists in every heart, a Puritan writer said. So it takes time and education, and that's what we haven't done. And that's why I continue to teach. And that's why I continue to do this show. So the question is, how educated are you? Do you know your history? Do you understand the complicated history of America? Are you willing to call out America on her sin? Because there's plenty of it. But you also need, on the other side, to be able to point out the beautiful and amazing things that have happened as a result of this nation existing. And God's blessings on it, despite our sin, which sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Because I got all kinds of sin. In my life, in my present, most likely in my future, and God still blesses me. Obedience matters, but his grace is lavish. And so this whole process, if there's any hope for this nation in a turnaround, it's in educating so that we can bring more and more people back to our two common languages of a Judeo-Christian ethic and understanding civics and the history of this country. That is the only way I see to see any kind of cohesiveness come back to this country. And if we don't, you're just going to see this cold civil war get deeper and wider and, God forbid, one day, violent. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.